Right now, it is a pleasure to welcome to the show Lisa Anderson, the head of LMA Consulting Group in Southern California. Lisa joins us. She is a logistics and supply chain expert, and Lisa joins us here on the Rip City Drive. Lisa, how are you this evening? Thanks for a few minutes of your time.
Very good. Thank you. How about you?
Hey, we're doing good. You know, we're hanging in there like everybody else. How is everything for you and your family? And, you know, what's it like right now? We'll get to the supply chain stuff in just a second. But what's it like right now in the greater Los Angeles area?
Well, everyone is staying home. So yeah. We're all locked up in our houses, I think, for the most part.
Yeah, definitely.
So, that's good. But so far, no signs. So that's a good thing.
You know, Chad and I think a lot of our listeners and viewers, we have a lot of questions about, you know, why the store shelves are empty. Obviously, we've seen the panic buying and the hoarding and everything going on, especially with paper products and certain grocery goods. But we wanted to try to drill down a little bit and find out why exactly this is happening on the supply side and maybe how we can recover from this. So I guess the first question we had for you. You know, I mean, I was in a local Walmart over the weekend here in the greater Portland area, and I talked to one of the managers. She said, hey, we had 8 pallets of toilet paper this afternoon. They were gone in an hour. So I guess stores are still getting some supplies, and they just can't keep it in stock. Where is the breakdown in the supply chain? Why do we continue to see the empty shelves?
Well, it actually has a name. It's called the bullwhip effect in supply chain circles, which basically means if you have a spike, which they typically mean smaller spikes, but like in this case, a big spike in demand at the end of the supply chain, like the consumer in this case, it gets bigger and bigger as you go out from there. So from that point of view, I mean, like the distributor sees the spike and they overreact to the spike, and then they order even more, which creates a bigger spike, and then the next, you know, the manufacturer next in the line sees these even more enormous spikes, and they're trying to figure out what demand is real, and they try to order more materials, and so everybody continues to overreact, and it gets worse and worse as you go out from this single purchase of a consumer, and so it just is a never ending just more and more panic. Panic throughout the supply chain creates bigger and bigger panic so that there's no way that the real demand can be kept up with. And the same thing is true once the demand tails in the other direction, because, you know, then suddenly the demand falls off, but yet everybody's still ordering like 10 times, 100 times more demand than they needed because of the old spike. So it's called the bullwhip effect, and that's why it's happening. Now there's things we can do about it, but I think I'll pause there and see if you have any questions.
Well, Lisa, one question I had, and I can't remember what grade I was in when we went over this in school, but I was wondering if you could provide for my listeners just the basic definition of supply chain economics, because I think this is at play here, and I think when people hear that, it will give them a better understanding.
Sure. So, first of all, I think it's a good idea to define the supply chain. So I see the supply chain as from your supplier's supplier. So let's just say, you know, I'm a manufacturer because I'm sort of in the middle of a supply chain. So I have a supplier that supplies me with materials or ingredients so that I can produce, let's say, food bars, because I actually have a food bar client. And so that is my supplier that delivers ingredients to me. However, that supplier has, you know, I don't know, it depends, but, you know, between 10 and 100 other suppliers, and those suppliers have other suppliers. So that's just from the manufacturer down the supply. That's the supply side of the chain. And then there is the other direction. So just because I'm a manufacturer, I could be sending it to another manufacturer because maybe I'm just manufacturing or producing or processing part of the product. Doesn't have to be food. It could be toilet paper, as you know, as you started off this conversation, and it goes to somebody else down the line that does something else with this product. So it could be there's multiple manufacturers in the supply chain, and then from there it goes to the distribution channels, which they can be quite complex. I mean, there could be multiple sets of distributors. There could be each. You know, the like, for example, if you went to Vons, Vons has distribution centers as well. And so then there's, you know, individual stores. And there's and so there's a lot of prongs, or whatever you want to call them, connections in your supply chain. So you have, say, it's from your supplier to your customers. So there's lots of layers of both customers and suppliers. And then in the middle, there's, of course, transportation. Who knows? I mean, for some products that the grocery stores are running out of, they get them from Asia. That supply chain was disrupted quite a while ago from this pandemic. And some of them are toilet paper, though, is actually produced in the U.S. So that's really bodes for it being solved much quicker. But anyway, it just depends. Where are your suppliers? What transport do they have to go through? Airports? Do they have to go through, on ocean carriers? What do they have to do to get from place to place? That certainly can provide delays these days, to be sure.
All right, so Lisa, let's talk about toilet paper. You mentioned it, and actually I didn't realize, but it sounds like it's mainly produced here in the United States. So that, to me, should be, quote-unquote, an easier fix. You alluded a minute ago, you said you have some ideas on how we can alleviate this. What are the solutions to getting, for instance, toilet paper, paper towels, those paper goods, back on the shelves? And I guess, why hasn't that happened to a greater degree yet?
Well, because the spike really just occurred very recently. And so in my local grocery store, everything was bare like a week ago. Yeah. And then they started limiting people to two of any particular item. Mm-hmm. And then the next time I came into the store, miraculously, there were several items that did not exist before in stock. So it's a matter, too, of how close their distribution center is to the store and how often they're replenishing the store from the distribution center, and then how often that distribution center is getting replenished from wherever it's getting replenished from. So we just need the good news is that, like, toilet paper is produced in the U.S., so we'll get to what they can do as far as increasing their production capacity, which means basically producing more toilet paper. But the toilet paper they are already producing just needs to get through the supply chain quicker, basically, to get to the stores to replenish. And then if we limit the number of, rolls of toilet paper people have, it'll keep them in stock longer. Because if everybody goes into the store and buys, 20 stacks of toilet paper, of course it's going to be out of supply pretty quick.
Lisa,
so
you were talking.
Do you want me to talk a bit about?
Yeah, I'm curious.
What about the manufacturing?
Yeah, what about cranking up the manufacturing of toilet paper? What, can they just produce more? Is it just that simple?
Well, to some degree, yes. I mean, you can. What you can do is, hopefully you have nobody that with coronavirus issues, because if you do, then of course you're going to have a reduced set of employees to produce toilet paper, which is going to cause a problem. Mm. With that said, let's hope that we don't have that problem. And then basically from there, what you can do immediately is run overtime. So, of course, there's a limit because you can't work 24/7. So it just depends. If you're running, let's say that they're probably running three shifts, 5 days a week. Let's just pretend. If they are, then it means that 5 days a week is already full, so they can't produce anymore in that facility with the current machine. But they could produce on the weekend. So then they would need to, ramp up to a fourth shift that would run on the weekends, which is actually more complicated to do than if you just had maybe two shifts running. And some of the places may very well only have two shifts running. It is easier to put on a third shift because you can hold people over for 4 hours, bring other ones in 4 hours early, and then you can hire temps and other folks who can fill that third shift or whatever shift you're trying to fill. So there's a lot of things you can do there, but there's also some other things you can do, and you can collaborate with manufacturers in the area that you're working in, because there are probably manufacturers that are shut down because maybe they live in a state like California, like we do, where non-essential businesses are not producing.
Yeah.
So they have a bunch of people who aren't working, and they may have like skills. So maybe finding somebody with like skills, a company with like skills, and working out a temporary arrangement would be a great way to get some additional resources. You also could purchase more equipment. Of course, that takes time.
Yeah.
And, you know, if everybody placed an order for a new machine now, it certainly wouldn't happen.
Right.
But you could, again, find some manufacturers and equipment supplier partners who maybe have machines that are used, that could be used for producing toilet paper, let's just say, or some other commodity that we're out of. And, you know, work out an agreement, again, to share machines or to share people or retool them. So, like, what that means is, the machine is could be used to produce toilet paper in this example, but it's not producing toilet paper today. And with some tweaks, which is way faster than buying a new machine, you could start producing toilet paper. And that's what some of the like car manufacturers have started to do by producing respirators. And there's a company in Orange County that was making apparel and started making masks. And, you know, there's several examples of items like that. So if the more we collaborate and work together as a community and as, you know, support our manufacturers and the people that are working there, the more likely we are going to be to increase capacity quickly.
Yeah. Well, I think that's the order of the day, right? The motto, we all need to work together, stay healthy. And, you know, obviously we're trying to do it by, you know, keeping our distance as well. So sounds like it's kind of tricky. Hey, Lisa, it's great information. Thank you so much for your perspective. I don't know if you have any clients that are, you know, toilet paper manufacturers, but if you do, please tell them that we need them to crank out some more product. Okay.
Will do. Actually, some of them do have spike demands because they have products that everyone's stocking up on. So
yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely.
Hey, Lisa, thank you so much for your perspective and a few minutes of your time this afternoon. We certainly appreciate it.
Yeah, so I enjoyed it and happy to do it. Thank you.
All right, there goes Lisa Anderson again, the head of LMA Consulting Group in Southern California.